Welcome back to Compass Live, the only and therefore the best proof of work live podcast and live stream. Wanted to welcome Chris and Christian Crowder to the stream. Really excited to talk about Ethereum, Ethereum mining post-ban, and maybe even a little merge conversation. Chris is a marketing director at Flexpool, and Christian Crowder is the president of BitPower, which is an American-based Ethereum mining pool or mining facility. Zach, I want to welcome you to the stream as well. Thanks for jumping on today.
Yeah, this one should be a lot of fun. Obviously, we mostly talk about Bitcoin mining on these streams. So we've done a few MEV and Ether mining related streams. I'm excited for another one here. This should be a super fun conversation. Chris and Christian, thank you both for coming on the show with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. So we'll start off with some introductions here. So we'll be more verbose than I was at the beginning here. Also kind of attached to that introduction, I'm just wondering about like the state of yourselves with like the crazy bull market we've been in. GPU mining is obviously like much more intense than ASIC mining in a few respects, mostly like the maintenance side of things. So just like a little mental health check, I guess, so to speak. Christian, start off with you on introduction and how the bull run has been for you so far.
Sure. So I'm Christian Crowder. I'm the president at American BitPower, and I've been mining Ethereum and other altcoins as well as Bitcoin for the past 6 years. It's obviously been an incredible bull market we've been experiencing that, you know, for those of us who've been through a few cycles, it's completely unprecedented. Just what a phenomenal run it is and it's been. And so for us, there's been a lot of growth and a lot of expansion up to this point. It's a really exciting time. And but, you know, there is obviously ETH 2.0 looming over, the merge looming over, and that does cause us to move around on our strategy a bit.
Definitely. Yeah, we're going to get to that later in the stream. I'm really excited to hear your guys' thoughts on the merge. Chris, I'll hand it over to you. Just an introduction and the current state of your firm or your pool and just like the bull market in general.
Hi, I'm Chris. I do the marketing and the business side of Flexpool. I've been in ETH mining since last year. I started on IceHash and then I got into mining and then somehow ended up joining a pool. So with current ETH mining, you are seeing a migration of hash rate. It used to be very centered in China. Now you're seeing a lot move to, I believe it's Kazakhstan and America. So I know Texas is booming when it comes to crypto mining. There still is a lot of hash rate in China. They're using, I think it's proxies and a few other services to really get out of China and mine. Chinese pools themselves within China, most of them have closed down. The rest are either closing down or talking about closing down at the end of the year. I know F2 pool, I believe, and a few others are just blocking China entirely at the end of the year. So ETH has been pretty interesting. I mean, back last year, I would expect the China ban to really shut China down, but it's just so profitable that the Chinese don't want to shut down. So even though the China government isn't really a cohesive whole sometimes, you have people say one thing and people say another. So even though we say it's banned, it's more like it's kind of banned, but not. It really depends what province you're in and how you do things, because as long as you're operating the company legally and paying taxes, they're not really just going to suddenly shut you down per se. It's really the illegal ones they're really going after. So there still is a lot of legal mining in China that's continuing, but you do see a lot of people moving over just because they're afraid that that crackdown on the legal aspect might happen anytime.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I just kind of wanted to follow up on that a bit because, well, first I wanted to say I noticed your preference for ETH mining instead of ETH mining. I don't know how everyone pronounces it or says it these days, but hard to keep up. But there's a lot of articles going around a couple weeks ago, I guess, with the 0% hash rate in China data from Cambridge. And like anyone who has any sort of like root of entry familiarity with mining just knows that data is obviously false. I'm just wondering, maybe Chris and then Christian, also curious to know your thoughts. If you can just extrapolate a little bit more on the current situation of mining, specifically for Ether mining pools and farms in China, and sort of the falsehoods of like that narrative that there obviously is still hash rate in China, a non-trivial amount of hash rate in China. And just because, you know, there was this sweeping crackdown, the market crash, hash rate crash, all these things happened, doesn't mean that there is zero mining activity in China anymore. It may be smaller scale or in different provinces, a little bit scattered, maybe harder to find. But it's definitely not a 0% hash rate in China anymore.
Absolutely not. Expand on that a bit. To what Chris was saying, yeah, absolutely. Of course, there's still hash rate, or there's still mining in China. I think all that you're seeing is the larger, more organized, cohesive units. They're not the ones that are easier to track and for the Chinese government to shut down and intervene with. You're not going to see as much activity from those. So it did take a hit. That's very obvious. Looking at the hash rate chart, you know, as very much like the Bitcoin hash rate chart, you could see where there were the immediate effects of a drop off in the hash rate, but by no means is it 0%, not even close.
Yeah, for sure. Chris, I don't know if you have any like anecdotes of Chinese ether miners like adapting to, you know, the new circumstance, political environment they're operating under, like reducing scale or just relocating farms around the mainland or something like that. But curious if you can extrapolate a bit more too.
Definitely a lot of relocation within China and from China to the outside. I know Kazakhstan has been huge. I estimate probably China was like maybe 2/3 of Ethereum hash rate at one time, and they've all moved outside. I still think there's about a quarter, because there's 800 terahash total right now, and I would think at least 200 is probably still within China. And even though we say Chinese hash rate, in the end, most of it still is Chinese because it's Chinese owned. I mean, even though they moved the machines out, they're still Chinese. So, I mean, there's Chinese companies that have basically been hosting in all these Russian facilities and Middle Eastern facilities and American facilities. I know there's been also a huge shift in Bitcoin ASICs. The thing with Ethereum is that a card doesn't make a lot of noise and it doesn't require like a ton of power per card, while Bitcoin is like 3,000 plus watts per machine. So Ethereum, I think it's been shifting more slowly out of China than Bitcoin ASICs, as Bitcoin ASICs really do need a warehouse. Well, Ethereum machines can really be hosted in your home. And I know in our Telegram group, a Chinese miner posted a little video of the police coming in, and they're all looking at a computer on the ground with like five GPUs around it. And they're all, wondering, what is this? Because in the end, a lot of Chinese miners are doing it from home. So for GPUs, they can get away with it. But for Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin ASICs, I think most of them have moved out of China because it's just so obvious that they're there. You can't really hide a Bitcoin ASIC the way you can a GPU.
Much harder to enforce a ban on, you know, an essential hardware component across millions and millions of computers than, you know, application-specific hardware, where it's like, clearly, obviously, this is a Bitcoin miner. It has serves no other purpose. So much harder ban to enforce.
Yeah, just kind of pulling on that thread. It's funny to see how like the design decisions from the Ethereum team back in like 2013, 2014, 2015 played out in the geopolitical scene over 2020, 2021 with the Bitcoin mining ban in China. If the Ethereum algorithm for mining was designed in any different way and there was like it wasn't ASIC hardened, then you would see Ethereum hash rate would have moved a lot more. Chris, you and I had a few conversations in Telegram about how Flexpool is still servicing a lot of Chinese users in China through Hong Kong and through, was it South Korea as well, like keeping those APIs live. Could you kind of tell me why you guys chose to do that? Was it just really just to get more of that market cap under your pool? Or was there something more to it? Like, do you guys have kind of like an ideological edge, or just because you guys are from Canada and it's safe to do it?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. For one thing, we're located in Canada, so according to Canadian law, Ethereum mining is completely legal and probably encouraged. but secondly, I think let me see, what's a good way to say this? When Sparkpool closed down, they closed down very suddenly. Like, their employees were given 2 weeks notice or less that we're closing down, you're all fired. So you have all these employees that have been in Ethereum for years, and not just like mining, but developing Ethereum. Like, I don't know if you've seen some of the developer chats in Ethereum, but they're like, Sparkpool was huge. Like, they sponsored a lot of the meetups. All their employees helped develop the Ethereum network. They didn't just sit back and collect all the money. They actually were active in the community. So you had all these developers that were basically unemployed, all these marketing people, all these customer service. So we basically saw an opportunity here because you have 100 plus people who are all extremely talented in Ethereum, who know the market, who know what they're doing. So we basically went and hired everyone we could because you have all these extremely talented people that honestly weren't being paid very much because Chinese salaries are very low, who are all basically out of the job with very little notice. So we hired everyone we could. And of course, with those people, we gained talent in the Chinese market because all these people knew SparkPool, they knew the customers, they knew the market. So here we are with a ton of people who know China. So we began expanding in China because, again, we know everything now because we have all their old employees. That was a huge push for us into China. I mean, in the end, I think we're the only Ethereum pool who's present on every continent besides Africa. I mean, we're in Australia, we're in South America. We're that pool that tries really hard to get as many customers as possible. I mean, I think most pools just focus on Europe and North America, or in the Chinese pool's case, China. So, I mean, we've done our best to be multicultural to get as many people as possible. We haven't restricted ourselves to any one continent.
I guess, Chris, just a quick follow-up question there. Maybe for some of our audience who isn't familiar with the dynamics you're operating in as you push into China, could you break down in just a little bit more detail? SparkPool closed down. You made a bunch of new hires and are now pushing into the Chinese Ether mining market, but you're located in Canada. Can you just sort of explain the geopolitical dynamics there that allow you to make that expansion and those hires after SparkPool closed down?
Well, we're on Amazon Web Services, and the way that makes it, because I don't think anyone understands how hard it is to manage a pool. Ether mining is incredibly resource intensive, especially when you're like forming the block, and any delay would result in an uncle. So we don't just use a single server in each data center. We use clusters of servers in every single AWS data center, and it is not cheap. Our bills, server bills for this year are well into the six figures. So it's very, very expensive to host a pool. So with AWS, they unfortunately don't have any center within China. So the closest we can get is their Asian centers, which basically surround China. So that's what we've done. We've done our best to reduce the ping from China to those centers. Not just us, but AWS in general has done their best because, again, AWS services a ton of customers within China. But it is a constant struggle. If we were, let's say, on Alibaba, Ethereum on Tencent or Alibaba, F2 pool, a few Chinese pools have servers within China. And if we were on them, we would do that. But because we're on AWS, we're very restricted in what we can do. We could open a server on another service, but it would be a lot of work, not just to do, but to maintain. Because AWS, it's very easy to reproduce our servers on different regions. But with another service, we just have to completely redo everything, which would be a pain in the ass. So that's partially what's guided us and what servers we picked, is that basically if Amazon is there, we're there.
Totally. Yeah, I remember talking about FlexPool when you launched it and how far you guys have come in just 1 year, from just getting a few blocks in December 2020 to taking up a minority position, and the Ethereum hash rate's pretty significant. And I think that's probably a good conversation for another stream going forward, just kind of comparing different pool services for different coins. It's much more straightforward to do Bitcoin pool services versus some of these other coins, just because the resource intensity is a lot higher. Christian, I want to throw this question down to you, and kind of looking at Ethereum mining from an American's perspective. Previously, before the Chinese ban, there was a lot more Ethereum being hashed in China. Like a significant portion of the network was there, just like with Bitcoin. But American Big Power has obviously been in America mining Ethereum for quite a while. So I'm wondering, from a competition perspective, how has the market changed? Have you guys noticed that there's been a lot more competition for Ethereum mining? Has it kind of stagnated, or how has that market kind of changed in the last 12 to 18 months?
Well, Ethereum, you know, mining, it's kind of always existed under the specter of proof of stake for the past couple of years, really. It's always been this thing that's a boogeyman in the closet around the corner. And so, you know, there was always this, there was less of what you see in Bitcoin, where you just see this ramp up of these just super data centers and the hundreds of megawatts. There was always sort of apprehension to lay out a ton of capital. But you did see when China dropped off in hash rate, you did see a very obvious like bump in profitability immediately. You saw a bump in availability of Ethereum ASICs, you know, operations that were running at a larger scale, the type of hardware they would use. You saw an large influx of that. However, you know, being that it is less resource intensive, it doesn't use as much power. You know, a lot of that hardware was quickly relocated and reabsorbed, the hardware that was looking for a new home. So as far as we saw, I mean, it was great because there was a fresh availability of hardware that, you know, we could get our hands on and we could deploy, you know, relatively cheaply for, you know, that brief period of time. But just because of the reasons I mentioned, it wasn't a huge happening for Ethereum miners. At least in the way we experienced it, it was a great bump for a while, availability of hardware, and then back to business as usual.
I guess, Christian and Chris, I kind of want your perspectives on, so I'm like, I don't follow the Ether mining space as closely as Will does, but sort of like sitting a little bit on the sidelines of that space, just in the Bitcoin mining camp, it seems like Ether mining, you know, is one of the most like difficult segments of the mining space, just from, I don't know, like you mentioned, there's the specter of the POS switch just sort of looming there. And obviously Ether miners got hit by the China ban, although maybe to varying degrees, just like Bitcoin miners and all other crypto miners. And, you know, the whole Ethereum community sort of to varying degrees, again, can be like combative towards miners because they want proof of stake and they don't want to be on POW anymore. I don't know, like how is life, I guess, as an Ether miner, just generally, especially over the past like 12 to 18 months with all of these things happening and lots of, you know, tail effects from all of them? Is it more difficult maybe than just, you know, simply mining Bitcoin, or is one thing after another? Is it kind of a headache?
So Ethereum mining, you know, just from a technical basis to start with, you know, it is substantially more difficult to, especially if you're running GPU rigs, it's substantially more difficult than Bitcoin mining to keep them running. They just tend to be more finicky. You're dealing with lots of different hardware vendors, countless numbers of configurations. But, you know, it comes with some optionality and fallback that you don't get with Bitcoin mining. So, you know, the attractions that I first had to Ethereum mining when I first started it, you know, it's just a few computers, are very similar to the attractions to large operators today, in that it's a multi-use processor. If something does happen to Ethereum, the hardware doesn't become worthless. It is technically more difficult, but if you can work hard and, you know, find, you know, get your processes down and find a way to scale, it comes with a lot of huge upsides that come along, you know, just with the benefit of mining Ethereum alone. So for Ethereum miners, you know, your number one concern has been, okay, when exactly is the real switch? Because I've been hearing next month, since I started Ethereum mining years and years ago. I mean, it is constant. It became so constant to the point that it really became white noise and I hardly paid attention to it anymore. Although now it is seeming absolutely inevitable, very real, that, you know, in 2022, at least at some point, we will have the merge occur. Right now, I believe they plan June, July. And so it's, you know, it's something that's what you're betting on if you're an Ethereum miner right now, is you're looking at, okay, when do I liquidate this hardware? How long do I hang my hat here? Because the outlook for GPU mining is bleak. If you are an Ethereum miner right now, Ethereum accounts for, it's a 20-to-1 ratio of the rewards in Ethereum mining versus all other currencies. So, you know, at ABP, we have multiple workloads that we put our GPUs towards. We do render workloads, machine learning workloads, and we develop software to help, you know, give ourselves some optionality in the different profit streams. But, you know, for most Ethereum miners who I'm not sure are operating, you know, with that kind of optionality, it is a difficult time, and it is a bit of a high stress environment because you just don't know how real the deadlines are. They've never been real before. The difficulty bomb's been delayed 4 times now. They're considering a fifth. So, very tricky environment for Ethereum miners.
Yeah, Chris, Christian, that's sort of what I was imagining, but I appreciate all that detail. It does seem like, Bitcoin mining has its challenges, but I think the stress level is definitely a lot lower across the board. Chris, curious to know your thoughts too on just, all the things that Ethereum miners have to weather, especially a bunch of them sort of coming to a head here over the past year, a year and a half or so. What's your stress level like?
I'm pretty relaxed. in the end, I would say I think people really overestimate what proof of stake is going to bring to Ethereum. You have this deadline that's approaching that I guess June is a 50-50 date, and it might happen, it might not. But I think a lot of people forget that it's GPUs aren't just for Ethereum. I mean, before Ethereum really grew, people were mining everything with GPUs. I think Claymore Dual Miner is pretty famous, and Claymore was mining multiple algorithms on the same card, because that's before Ethereum picked up. And even if mining becomes unprofitable now, I think a lot of people are going to stick with it, because Ethereum was unprofitable for many years. And anyone that kept mining Ethereum while it was unprofitable is probably on an island with a big yacht somewhere, because in the end, anyone that sticks with it could see huge rewards if they really picked up. And plus, I mean, in the end, the power cost of running a few GPUs isn't huge for most people. So you will see like factories maybe close down, but I think whole miners are going to keep with it for a very long time, even if it's unprofitable to mine the other coins. And there's two projects I should probably mention. One is that even if Ethereum goes 2.0, I think a lot of us expect another ETC-like situation. Not going to speak too much on that because I don't know any of the details, but I assume someone somewhere is going to start an ETC fork, and we will see how profitable that is. But secondly, I think people forget that GPUs are quite sophisticated instruments now. I mean, they can do everything. And in the end, I think a GPU, even with the big sell-off, you're going to see a lot of buyers and a lot of interest, because GPUs aren't just used for video games. They're used for rendering, computational workloads. I remember there was a project, I believe, to sequence the COVID virus with GPUs, and you could donate your hash rate to sequence the virus and figure it out. And I mean, we're heading into a world of huge technology where we need as much processing power as possible. And you have all these GPUs, and there's a massive chip shortage, so you can't really make more GPUs. So I think there's going to be a bunch of projects that look at all this processing power and find out ways to rent it to people to basically maybe sequence the human genome, figure out how to turn us into Superman. I don't know. I know there's one project in the very early stages called Golem that I'm working with a little bit, and we're hoping that they're going to be like a cloud processor. So basically, you turn on your Golem, they pay you in the Golem token on Matic, and then you get paid basically for renting out your processing power to visual designers, to video games, etc. In the end, I honestly think the future is cloud computing. I think in the future, none of us will buy GPUs, because in the end, all the video games are just going to be streamed right to you. I mean, why do you need a GPU on your computer? Why can't the video game guy run the processing on his computer and just stream it live like Netflix? In the end, I think the cloud is the future, and I think these GPUs are worth a lot more money than people think. And the shortage, because in the end, you can see there's a shortage. There's a massive shortage in chips. Everyone is putting all their chips in cars. I looked at the Cadillac Escalade, and I think it's over a 1 year wait for the Escalade with Super Cruise, because people need these chips for self-driving cars. I mean, if you think there's a shortage now, imagine all these factories, the same number of factories, but now we're putting a chip in every car for self-driving. We're putting a chip in every bike. We're putting a chip in in every single device everywhere, but you have the same number of factories that we have now, and it's not cheap or fast to make these factories. So you have all these GPUs lying around, and I think this processing power is going to be used when it comes to next year. Someone is going to find out a way.
Totally. I think that's a very good point to bring up, that GPUs have a lot of use outside of just mining. And then Christian, the point you brought up also, if you're mining Ethereum, you have a lot more optionality. I can think of just like a multitude of ways of using Ether to earn profit, whether that's like on DeFi or lending or whatnot. There's a lot of ways to kind of secure your bottom line, which to date, I mean, there's some ways you can do it with Bitcoin, but a lot of people don't like to do it. We had Jamie from Hut 8 and Ben from Bitfarms come on talking about how they use their Bitcoin, and Bitfarms just hodls it and Hut 8 lends it out a little bit here and there, but not a large portion, just because they want to make sure that they're hodling. Ethereum miners have a little bit more optionality when it comes to what they're mining. One point I did want to bring up, and I'm going to share my screen really quick here, is actually, I'm going to share that later. But I just want to bring up like mining revenue. I think a lot of people don't understand that mining revenue between Bitcoin and Ethereum, Ethereum's been leading mining revenue for the last few months, and it doesn't look like that's going to stop anytime soon. All the while, Bitcoin mining is much more industrialized than Ethereum mining, which is just, it's kind of odd to see like this home mining activity be larger than the substance of Bitcoin mining, which of course is like always in a CNBC article every week with some new giant farm in Texas. So Christian, I want to throw that over to you. Since you guys have been kind of been a more industrialized player in the Ethereum mining game for a little bit, what's your take on seeing these huge profits and revenues for Ethereum miners and yet the lack of mainstream media attention on it?
I think a lot of it is, you know, Bitcoin being the Coca-Cola of its world, it is, you know, definitely the first, definitely the most well-branded. I mean, it's something that the majority of the country is still getting their heads around. What is this thing? So I think that, you know, that alone is going to cause there to be more attention drawn to Bitcoin operations. And also for the fact that, you know, in people's communities, in their worlds, I mean, we have people drive by our operations and they're like, what on earth is going on there? You know, because it, you know, it's a larger operation. It's got a larger footprint, and it's 10 times so for Bitcoin mining. Definitely like communities feel and see when 100 megawatt installations come into their towns. And so it's, you know, definitely going to catch a lot more press there for that reason. I know here in Oklahoma, you know, we're a part of this. We're seeing an influx of, we're absolutely inundated with requests for people moving mining hardware in here, a lot of it from China. And so naturally there is a response. It, you can be a lot more covert when you don't consume as much power like Ethereum mining does. And that's the situation you find yourself in, just big power, big footprint, lots of you know, utility involvement, lots of state regulator involvement, permitting involvement. And it all just comes into the one cohesive picture of Bitcoin mining is at the forefront of what your everyday person might actually interact with.
Totally. Chris, I'm going to share the same question to you, especially since you guys kind of booted up your operation only a little over a year ago, and now your pool is doing pretty well. Why is there no attention on Ethereum mining when it's compared to Bitcoin mining, even though one's a larger industry?
I think one thing is that you can't really, isn't there not apples to apples? Bitcoin is like gold. It's really easy for people to focus on one thing. Well, Ethereum isn't gold. It's more like a company. It does so many different things. I mean, you have Ethereum, you have USDC, USDT, you have all these coins, NFTs, financing on the Ethereum network. So Bitcoin is gold. I mean, you'll hold it and it looks good, but Ethereum, it's actually useful. You do something with it. I mean, if I think there's a nice saying, if the world ended tomorrow, cash would be worthless. We'd all want resources. Ethereum is a resource. You use it. Even if you don't really want Ethereum, you kind of need it to use the network to do all these things. So, I mean, if you compare Ethereum to Bitcoin, you can really see Ethereum skyrocketing in value in proportion to Bitcoin. I mean, when Bitcoin goes up, Ethereum goes up. When Bitcoin goes down, Ethereum goes down. But in the end, Ethereum generally goes up faster than Bitcoin. And plus, Ethereum with staking coming is going to pay a lot larger return to hold Ethereum than Bitcoin. So I completely expect Ethereum to skyrocket probably for the next 10 years as people really adopt it. I mean, Bitcoin's been out a lot longer than Ethereum, and because it's the first, it really got sensation. But as people get into crypto, they all get into Ethereum, because in the end, Ethereum has all these functions, while Bitcoin, basically, you just hold it. And not to be rude, but holding it is something real old people do with their gold. It's not something young people do. Young people want to interact with something. And I'm sorry, I know you all mine Bitcoin, so it's bad for me to say that. But in the end,
no, it's
Sorry.
So no, no offense taken at all. I think it's I think you're right. And I think the fee revenue, all of that sort of highlights an interesting dynamic in the market overall. Like, I mean, Ethereum probably isn't going anywhere. Bitcoin probably isn't going anywhere, but based on revenue, we can sort of see what the market is like more interested in using right now. I mean, Damien, if you can show up my screen or throw my screen up really quick, I wanted to show something sort of complimentary to Will's here. This is the Bitcoin mempool over the past year or so. And, you know, we see this is just unconfirmed transaction count. Like there's just nothing here. Like almost the mempool's been empty basically since early July, or almost empty. And I think most of that is just a product of, you know, the market being more interested, like you were sort of alluding to, Chris, in playing around with new DeFi apps, obviously huge continued craze for NFT minting and trading and selling and all these sorts of things. They just have their own different segments in the market, and nothing wrong with that. I think Andreas years ago comparing them to sort of like sharks and lions, each dominant in their own domains, is the perfect analogy and still very accurate today. But yeah, they both are, you know, good, just serving very different purposes. And right now, as for the Bitcoin mempool, people are just using Bitcoin less right now. So yeah,
it's just they're dealing with a totally different type and amount of data. When you know, you go from everything from DAOs to NFTs to smart contracts, there's just a tremendous amount the Ethereum blockchain has to account for. And, you know, that's what's created this massive data backlog that has driven up fees like crazy. You know, it's a lot. It's something people kind of don't fully grasp even today, just how massive the amount of miner rewards are for Ethereum versus all other GPU mined currencies. I mean, it is a 20-to-1 ratio at minimum when you look at just the sheer dollar value of a transaction fees and miner rewards.
And I do want to add here that there's one reason Ethereum isn't big yet. And I think the reason is honestly that the Ethereum dev team has no desire to make it big right now. They're still developing it. It's not a finished product. I mean, if you look at the blocks on Ethereum, gas fees are high, but the developers are deliberately keeping gas fees high so that people migrate to L2s and develop rollups. They could make gas fees lower tomorrow. I mean, they could double or triple or quadruple block sizes. I mean, I think if we look at the technology and the software, I mean, Ethereum blocks could probably be 10 times bigger or more if the developers actually cared about lowering gas, but they don't really care about that. What they care about is developing the technology. So they see high gas fees as an incentive for people to develop and get on L2s and rollups because they believe that's the best way to scale the technology. They're not really focused on increasing Ethereum price or reducing gas. And I mean, that might be a focus a lot of people disagree with, but that's their focus is on the technology, not really Chris. On the price.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there with one, and I don't mean to veer the conversation too much to protocol development instead of mining, but I think you're spot on there that like Bitcoin is for all intents and purposes like a finished product. Like it is what it is, and now people will use it and hold it for whatever reason they want to. Ethereum and other sort of EVM blockchains are not anywhere close to being like finished products now. But Bitcoin is, and possibly Bitcoin is the only like finished blockchain, I guess. And you know, now we'll just see which their competitive values in the market. But yeah, I don't know.
You got it.
Well, I guess you can take us back to mining.
Yeah, totally. I think Christian might be having some audio in and out issues, so we'll let him handle that for a second. But it's all good because I actually have a pool question for Chris. So we saw that after the ban, there's a lot of crackdown on Ethereum mining, but a huge pinpoint and pain point for Ethereum miners was pools, because they're just like a centralized entity that are very easy to crack down on for the Chinese government. And they did that, right? Spark pool closed. And then also I think it was B pool also had to close. So I'm wondering like who was the winners and the losers out of that? And going forward, how do you expect the pool ecosystem to rebalance? Because right now, F2 pool and one other pool, Ethermine, escaping my name really quick. Ethermine and F2 pool could technically 51% attack the network because they have so much hash rate. And that's a pretty low Nakamoto coefficient, as we call it. So Chris, throwing that question to you.
Well, I think if the Ethereum devs felt there was a risk, they would take action, but they probably don't because Ethermine is a huge player in Ethereum development, just like SparkPool, and that a lot of their developers are involved in other projects. So in the end, you don't attack something your company is based on. In the end, even after POW, Ethermine doesn't care too much because they're heavily invested in POS. They do staking, etc. So they're not really affected. F2 pool is less well trusted. But in the end, F2 pool is closing down their Chinese customers at the end of December. They've already taken a lot of actions to cut down on China. So while they have gained a lot of hash rate, in the end, they might lose quite a bit when they shut down China. I don't know how much of their activity will be in China. And in the end, some Chinese miners are probably going to use proxies to get around that ban anyway. So those are the two biggest players in Ethereum. And then you have much smaller ones. I mean, the third to the fifth pool combined only equals the top one pool. So right now, Ethereum is quite concentrated in the top two pools. I mean, more than 50% of hash rate is in the top two. I would say the only real risk is, I would say there's actually no real risk to Ethereum. It's fine because in the end, F2 pool and Ethermine will probably never get along in attacking the network. Because I could see F2 pool maybe doing something because they have a reputation, but Ethermine is known for being super pro Ethereum developer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting dynamic. There's been a lot of conversations in Ethereum mining circles about what the pool game looks like going into the merge, whether that's like pools rugging customers because they know that their pool service is about to shut down. So why not just keep coins, not distribute them to miners, or even just pools ganging up at the last second to slow down the block countdown leading up to the merge so that the merge takes longer to happen. I think a lot of these things won't happen just because the incentives are aligned for people to keep mining more Ethereum. But there's definitely a lot of questions around that. Christian, I'm wondering, are you back?
I am back. I'm here.
Awesome. I'm going to lob the same question to you that I just asked Chris. So we saw some winners and some losers coming out of the Chinese mining ban for Ethereum. That was a little bit different than what we saw with Bitcoin. Some Chinese Bitcoin pools can still operate, like Antminer or Antpool. Via BTC, but SparkPool, Bpool, some of these other Ethereum pools had to shut down. I'm wondering why you think that happened, and then going forward, how you see the pool dynamics changing for the Ethereum network.
Well, a lot of who lives and who dies is up to the Chinese government. In that sense, so it's difficult to say what goes on behind closed curtains. You're certainly going to see a geographical tendency to locate more around where is the actual processing hardware going. So, as Chris mentioned, ping being located close, it's an important feature, and you try to do your best to reduce that, reduce your uncle blocks as much as possible. So it seems natural. You're going to see pool providers try to offer more services in the Kazakhstan region, in the United States. And so I can see how flexible, being very well situated for what's been occurring.
Awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. Kind of pivoting back the conversation to that centralized aspect, though, that I asked Chris about, are you worried about any repercussions coming from centralized pool services over the next 6 to 9 months before the merge? That's a huge discussion point in Bitcoin mining, is like how centralized are pool services and making sure that there's not a huge amount of pools that can attack the network. But with Ethereum right now, there's two, like F2 pool and Ethermine control over 50% of the hash rate.
Right. No, it's absolutely antithetical to everything cryptocurrency blockchain technology has attempted to prevent for a long time. And, I remember in the early days, Dwarf Pool was considered this major threat as, it was growing too much in size. And, so we're fortunate that, pools like FlexPool and others that, attempt to gain back some of that market share, keep things more distributed, are doing so. To add on to that, I hope that we see, as there's more and more stakers, we don't see a centralization of stakers, seems like it was easier to decentralize processing power because you could run it at home. You could have lots of home gamers be successful and operate profitably. And, I suppose that is true as well with Ethereum miners, or I'm sorry, Ethereum stakers. It's just you, when you have smaller amounts of Ethereum to stake, you're less liquid, more liable to spend that versus if you're very wealthy, if you're a large institution, you can stake massive amounts and indefinitely and accumulate wealth. So yes, centralization, huge, huge concern for any project in the space as a, you know, it's a core issue at the root of what we're trying to prevent.
Just to add to that, I would argue against centralization of staking just because what you see with exchanges is that they're offering like 4 to 6% returns on staking. But realistically, I think with MEV and TIPS, you're looking at maybe 20 to 25% or more APR on ETH staking once you go past the merge. I mean, if we opened a, I would say if we opened a, let's say the merge happened tomorrow and we had a 2.0 pool, our pool would pay, I think, 25% to 50% APR based only on our MEV and TIPS income. So if exchanges are currently advertising 6%, and I get the distinct impression since, because right now Binance is keeping the MEV income on its ETH pool. So I completely expect them to keep it on their POS pool. So if exchanges keep that income while some pools that are smaller offer the full income, I think stakers are going to switch to the pool that's paying them five times more. And that's what you've actually seen in Ethereum, and that even though Binance is so attractive for mining because people don't have to pay payout fees, very few people mine to Binance because they pay like 5% less than every other pool because they keep a lot of stuff. In the end, there's a reason that people gravitated towards certain pools is because they pay them more. And in the end, let's say Binance pool and a couple others who I'm not going to name are paying their miners a lot less because they keep a huge chunk. And in the end, people move off that because they know or they get a general feeling why. I mean, you'd expect Binance to be the biggest Ethereum pool going by how crypto works, but instead people mine an Ethermine and F2 pool and send their ETH to Binance and pay an extra fee for that because Binance is just so awful to mine to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think you're... Go ahead, Christian, actually.
No, I was going to say, I mean, very fortunate that that's the case. You know, hopefully as ETH staking becomes, you know, more and more adopted and commonplace, you'll see just the providers and the pools become more and more competitive with their rates. And so, yeah, no, the more the merrier. Glad that y'all will be offering that or already do.
We've discussed it in the end. I mean, it's hard to be a staking pool in Canada because there's just so many financial licenses required. If we didn't need a license, we'd probably offer it tomorrow. But as it is, we're required to either open up a company in another country or jump probably through 5 years of paperwork to be a staking pool in Canada. So we're not sure which way to go. We might look into decentralized staking or offering a client, but we haven't really pursued those plans yet because in the end, it's not, we're in no rush. I mean, next year we'll probably look at it, but not this year. This year I'm focused on paying taxes.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And it's funny you bring up the staking aspect. It's much more centralized in the sense that there's a lot of KYC issues around it as compared to Bitcoin mining or any mining in general. You just kind of plug and play, pretty simple to get going. I'm wondering about what you guys do with your Ether holdings. We've talked with a few different Bitcoin miners. A lot of them choose to hold what they're mining. Significantly over this year, we've seen most public firms hodl all their Bitcoin and then take advantage of public markets. For both you guys personally, do you guys hodl your Ether or do you guys lend it out in like a DeFi platform? Or do you guys sell it just to cover costs? Christian, I'll start with you if you're comfortable sharing that.
Yeah, certainly. We attempt to hold as much of our Ethereum as possible. I mean, easy to have that strategy, you know, when you've been coming out of, you know, the past year of Ethereum's just absolute insane performance. So, you know, clearly, you know, when you're in the middle of this kind of a trend, it's very easy to take that stance. We do, you know, work with many different groups, and obviously they handle their finances in the way they choose. And so, you know, we don't get 100% control over all the Ethereum we mine, but for what we do, we hold as much of it as possible.
Chris, same question to you.
So it's nice that our employees can generally be paid in work product because we find our employees in our channel because they mine on our pool and we usually just post an advertisement and everyone's like, oh, I'm a web designer and I mine Ethereum. Why don't I work for you? So we hire people on contract and we pay in work product, which is nice. That saves us a few steps. A lot of Ethereum that we make goes to pay towards paying our server bills. So we had to cash out and then we have to use my credit card to pay really huge bills. Some of it goes into my Celsius wallet. and I don't know what Alex does with his, but in the end, a lot of it goes towards bills and a lot of it's now going towards taxes. But I do like Celsius. I mean, how can you argue against like 10% on stable coins? That's insane. I mean, my bank makes 1% interest. I'm much happier with 10% a year on my stable coins. I feel like I can retire if I accumulate enough. But and I also, SushiSwap is great because if you lend stuff on SushiSwap or liquidity pool, you can make really good returns. It's knowing the gas fees that kill you.
Yeah, that seems to be like the benefit of using or Ethereum mining. There's like so many applications out there to take advantage and even gain more income than you would otherwise.
Well, especially, you know, when you're in Ethereum, you're in, you know, the altcoin universe, especially these days with the emergence of so many different projects and so many things you can dip your toe into. It's hard to keep it all in one place when you are enticed by just the absolute massive spikes occurring in the market left and right in all kinds of projects. So, you know, we definitely branch out and try to take advantage of some of the ape season that's going on.
Totally, totally. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of the stream here and I want to do something called like 30 second hot seat questions. Just kind of bump around to both you guys and get your opinions on hot topics for Ethereum mining. One of those being all different altcoins that you can mine. So we'll start off with ETH2. Does it happen before June, which is the next deadline that they've set? Christian, I'll start with you.
I don't think so. I mean, just based on everything I've seen, based on just the continued delays and just sort of the posturing and stance we're seeing so far, I do think that the ETH team, you know, with the emergence of some of the smart contract platforms, killer Ethereum killers, if you will, I think they are in a more motivated place than ever to get moving faster than ever. But I don't think they hack it by in time.
Okay, Chris.
I disagree a bit with that. I don't think Ethereum devs have ever seen any other coin as a threat, to be honest. If they did, they'd make a lot different moves than they do. I mean, look at, I think it's Sol. I mean, Sol is successful because they have a lot of transactions, but in the end, they could, ECH devs could triple block size, reduce gas to almost zero, and kill Sol and 90% of the other altcoins tomorrow if they wanted. In the end, they move at their own pace because they want a very perfect product that has basically no deficiencies. I think ETH2 is ready, but in the end, the fact is they need to test as much as possible to get it perfect. And I know a lot of people don't like miners, but in the end, they're much more focused on having a good product. And the cost of miners, it's not like one more year of mining won't hurt anyone for them. They're much more focused on having a perfect product and taking it into time. So they are moving towards that goal and people are cracking the whip to move it. But in the end, I've seen what they're doing. I mean, they haven't even finalized the merge spec yet. They've only had an initial proposal. So, I mean, they are not ready for 2.0 in a perfect scenario. I mean, they could rush it tomorrow and get it done and it would probably work. But you don't take a 99% chance with a $1 billion coin. You want a 99.9999% chance. So you see the Ethereum devs are spinning up all these test nets, like new test nets that would perfectly simulate the merge. They are doing all these things to make sure they are guaranteed that this will work well. And they still have proposals they're talking about. I completely expect them to merge within 2 or 3 months of finalizing all the plans and doing all the test nets. I don't expect them to merge doing the merge and setting a date until they've actually finished all this testing, finished the final spec, finished these things. So to me, June is a good date because miners should be ready for it to stop. But that doesn't mean June is going to be the date. June is a date they are targeting so that people keep working on it. Because in the end, we think of Ethereum devs as all focused on this one project, but they're actually looking at like 100 different projects. So they want a lot of these developers to be focused on the merge, which is why they're setting these dates. But in the end, these developers all have their own projects that they want to pursue. So in the end,
yeah, there's a constant shuffling of their priorities and which part of ETH 2.0 they roll out next. And it does seem that more recently, they have reprioritized to attempt to get the merge, the switch to proof of stake out as quickly as possible.
Yep, completely. They are focused on the merge, but they are not rushing it per se. They want to finish the test nets. They because in the end, they want to test everything, their developers. They don't want a Cyberpunk 2077 that just rushed out of all these bugs. They want it perfect the first shot. So I watched their dev channels. They are spinning up test nets now to test the merge. They are making sure everything is ready for it. And that's going to take months because testing doesn't happen fast. So, I mean, June is a good date to target. I don't think they're going to make June. But in the end, I think it's a date everyone should be ready for. Just because miners, I mean, if you're going to buy cards now, you should assume June is the date when you make your profit scenario.
Yeah, that's a good way of kind of framing it for people who are interested in mining Ether. It's just like June is coming and you should ROI and plus a little margin there beforehand. Next hot seat question, just as we kind of close out more, what are some other proof of work coins for GPUs that you guys are mining or interested in? I know Ergo is one, or Ergo, I haven't heard it pronounced yet. But what kind of coins are you guys looking at besides Ether? Christian, I'll start with you.
You know, there's a lot of different really cool projects going on, and you know, like Solar and Aeon and Ravencoin and you know, Ergo, and you know, there's many different ones to go after. But you know, it's worth mentioning just how small they are in comparison to Ethereum's. And so, you know, as much as we look at those coins and we, you know, think, okay, like this could be a baseline of a good profit stream. It's important for us as, you know, we have a large amount of GPU mining. We also do quite a bit of ASIC mining as well. But it's important for us to bear in mind that, you know, there's going to be, and we do have other profit streams available to us that are outside of blockchain. I hope, you know, as Chris mentioned, that we get to a point where, you know, the massive potential, a massive need for GPU compute, I hope that the glue and the developers, they get together to create blockchain projects that allow GPUs, which are very capable devices, which have just a vast array of use cases, to connect with more useful blockchain projects, you know, in the machine learning applications and rendering applications. So until that happens, though, you know, just have to restate, Ethereum miners, you know, that they, you can expect to see, or GPU miners, you expect to see very reduced revenues when the merge does occur.
Chris, same question to you. What other proof of work GPU coins are you guys looking at on the pool level? And if you do any self mining?
Well, we don't, I say flexible, we don't think small. The three biggest coins by emissions for proof of work are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Chia. And we have pools for them all. With Chia especially, I mean, they've done pretty well. I mean, the World Bank just adopted them for their carbon system. Costa Rica just adopted it for its like environmental things. And it's only like 1 year in. So that's pretty good for 1 year in. They look like ADA. But in the end, we pursue the coins that pay like that have significant activity. I mean, there's a bunch of other GPU coins like Ergo, Raven, Vero. I mean, but in the end, all these coins, let's say they're less than 1% of Ethereum emissions daily. So it's not really worth it. At least I think Chia got up to 20% of emissions, which was pretty good. I think in the end, for proof of work, I don't, unless another coin really hits it big, I don't see a huge future for GPU proof of work. I expect services like Golem and NiceHash to absorb a lot of it. And I think Golem or another service like Golem will have the most potential after 2.0 or well, the merge, because in the end, that's the service that rents out your GPU, not just for mining, but for processing power. And I think that's going to be the next big step, is because people can't get a GPU. I mean, I don't know if you know how much people spend for like a data center GPU, but it's a lot of money to have that much compute power in a server. I think it's like $100,000 to have like an NVIDIA Tesla core to do like your sampling and modeling. So I completely see cloud service GPU rentals as being a huge business after the merge. And I think there's going to be more companies like Golem that pursue it.
Totally. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Sorry, you also asked, do I mine? Yeah, yes, I mine. I have a few GPU rigs. I looked at getting an ASIC, but they're just so loud and I have nowhere to put it.
They are definitely pretty loud. That's for sure. So you got to get a hosting option. We can help you out with that. Or Christian could, I'm sure, as well. last question, as we kind of close up shop here, bull run, where does it end and how does it look for Ethereum kind of coming out of this? You guys have mentioned that GPUs are pretty expensive, and with the merge, that adds a whole other dynamic. Wondering if you think people are maybe over leveraged a little bit, and where we're at in the bull market. Christian, I'll start with you, and then Chris, and we'll kind of close up here.
I mean, it is extremely difficult to say in the case of Ethereum. I keep my hand on the pulse of a lot of different smart contract projects. And, you know, I think Ethereum's big challenge, big struggle is going to be to get their transaction fees down, which is obviously something at the forefront of their minds and that they're working to get done. But, I can definitely see Ethereum to have continued success. How long it runs, I think, it will correlate with Bitcoin as it always has to an extent. I don't think Ethereum's going anywhere, but I do think that they are operating in a new environment for them where there is a lot of transactional volume going on other smart contract platforms. And it's good to see a friendly competitive market.
Chris, to you, where does this bull market go? And are most people over leveraged at this point?
It's hard for me to talk about the short term because the short term is all about people's opinions. And honestly, it's not really something you should focus on. I would say long term, if you look at Bitcoin, there's a set amount of emissions and some is lost every year. So once you get to that full emissions where there's no new Bitcoin produced, you basically just have negative emissions every year and some is lost. And then, of course, the world population is just going up. So you have less Bitcoin per person every year. So basically, unlike gold, where we can keep mining gold, we can't keep mining Bitcoin once you get to a zero block size. So I could see Bitcoin skyrocketing just because it's rare. You're going to have less than one Bitcoin per person and then 0.1 Bitcoins per person. And it's always going to have sentimental value as the first. I could see in the year 10,000 that we're very sentimental about Bitcoin as the first coin because cryptos have taken over the world. And if you look at Ethereum is going to be in negative emissions eventually because in the end, they burn some every block. And with staking, we look at emissions today because POW has huge emissions with 2 ETH a block. But with staking, emissions go way down. So you're going to see a lot more Ethereum after the merge burn than you see being made. And once you have negative emissions every year and significantly negative emissions, then you should see price rise like mad, especially when all the research they're doing in state size and such means more bigger blocks, which means more transactions and less fees, which means more use. I mean, Ethereum has a huge future. The only thing holding them back really is the speed of their research.
Totally. I echo you there. I think there's a lot going on depending on the coin dynamics. Chris, Christian, I want to thank you both for spending the time to come on our stream and kind of educate our audience about Ethereum mining. You can follow both of them on Twitter. Christian at BitPower, I think is the handle. And then Chris is with Flexpool as well. So both on Twitter, also both active on Reddit, or at least Chris, you're very active on Reddit. See you all.
Yeah, we barely use Twitter. Please use our Reddit.
Yeah, classic Ethereum miners on Reddit. Also active Discord channel there. So I want to thank you both for coming on the stream today and thank the audience for listening. Please do like and subscribe to the channel. It helps our audience find this information and other miners like yourself also find this information. And for that, that's a wrap for both of us. Thanks, Zach, for coming on the stream today.
Thanks, guys. This was a ton of fun. Glad you could come on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.